News Talk 99.7 WNTK AM 1490 FM 98.9 WUVR. So welcome to a new show that we're doing here. It's with George Neward of George Neward Construction in Sunapee, as well as Trusted Reynolds Automotive in Newport. And the whole idea here is that ultimately we're going to ask you any kind of questions you have, relating to your home, to your cars, anything that you'd like answered from a local expert. And we're going to just kind of see how it goes. So we got George right here. Good morning, George.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. So for anyone that doesn't actually know about you, if you just want to give like a brief introduction, about who you are, what you're doing in the area.
Okay. So I had a construction company in Sunapee. I've had it since 2000. And prior to that, I had a couple other ventures with partners, which didn't work out. And the Sunapee gig construction company started in 2000. And I started by building projects for, I was a general contractor for several different general contractors like North Cape Design and Old Hampshire Designs from New London. Like I was a framing and exterior finish, siding, doors, windows, roofing, like that kind of thing for local contractors, local GCs.
Yep.
So from that, I worked for 10 years or so doing that type of work, low key, just working for general contractors, doing their frames, finishing the outsides, doors, windows, like getting the shell up. We called it a watertight shell.
Yep.
And then from there, my reputation grew as a very competent and decent framer. And then I started getting jobs, particularly in my local town, Sunapee, for local people that would just call and be like, hey, can you work on this? Can you work on that? And basically anything that my phone rang for in Sunapee, I would answer. And so I was always aware of the fact that smaller jobs would lead to bigger jobs and the jobs get bigger and bigger and bigger. And we kind of like are in a really good place right now where we're doing bigger jobs. And we have a pretty sizable workforce and employees, workers' comp. Like we have a good benefits package for our guys. And the complexity of our work keeps growing. And so we're experiencing a sizable growth because the market will bear it. And so it's kind of nice.
Yeah. And how'd you get into the Trusted Rentals side of things?
Okay. So the Trusted Rentals side was always something that I wanted to do. It was something that I knew that because the construction company was going to grow to the size it is, I knew that the construction company needed a support company, something to fix its vehicles, something to maintain its fleet. Like I just knew at a certain point that relying on a local entity to fix all our stuff was going to be difficult, problematic, scheduling. Like I just knew I wanted to do that in-house. And so I was actually standing in the shower one day and I was trying to think about names and couldn't think of anything. And this process went on for quite some time. And then one day we were on a job and it was in Newbury and a local neighbor of a job we were working on came over and wanted to borrow a man lift that I had for trimming some trees on a weekend. And I just kind of looked at him strange. What? And I said, well, I can't let you borrow it, but I can let you rent it. And so from that, I went home and whipped up a contract for a weekend rental. And basically I made $500.
Nice.
For a piece of equipment that was going to be sitting there doing nothing over a weekend. And so then I started becoming curious about whether or not the market would bear this type of exposure to a guy that would rent equipment. And I bought an excavator as on a whim. I bought a mini excavator and it rented. I put an ad in the shopper that rented. And then I bought another one from Kubota and then that one rented. And then I bought another one from Kubota and finally Kubota shut me off after three machines. And at that point, I knew I was onto something decent.
Wow. The rest is history.
Well, it's not that it's not. It certainly had its detractors. You know,
sure.
Part of the issue, too, is that I hired a guy, Scott Lacoste, to come work for me in 2007. And I hired him as a carpenter. And come to find out, he didn't really want to be a carpenter. He wanted to be an excavator operator, and he was kind of the first one that encouraged me to buy an excavator. And then I didn't have any means to move it, so I was relying on people to move it, and that scheduling became problematic. And so I I had to buy a dump truck and a trailer. I didn't have my CDL, so I had to go get my CDL license. Like, the whole thing kind of just came about in 2007, 2008, where I started to develop a base of equipment. And then by 2011, when the rental company started, well, technically the rental company didn't start till the middle of 2013, but the rental of equipment started in 2011 through the construction company, because from 2007-8 to 2011, I'd been buying pieces of equipment that would help us in the construction company, but it was kind of hanging around in the off season. You know, excavators were hanging around in the wintertime and in the summertime when we weren't digging dirt. I was staring at equipment that was idle. And so when the man lift situation hit, kind of got the wheels turning, the creative wheels turning, as to whether or not our local area, the Upper Valley area, like our region, would support an interest in having equipment available to people. And I was overwhelmed by its by the interest that was shown in it. So kind of started by accident and then kind of evolved to where it is now. We have about 46 pieces of equipment that we rent.
Jeez, pretty substantial. So obviously here we are in the middle of winter. Everyone's kind of just grinning and bearing it through, you know, January, February, March, until spring finally rolls around sometime in April or May. And I know keeping your home secure and warm is obviously still on the top of people's minds. So I know you had some kind of topics to discuss in terms of making that happen with, you know, windows and doors and all things home improvement related, kind of focus on that. If you wanted to kind of delve into that for us, that'd be fantastic.
Okay, so there's a lot of pieces and parts to a home's performance. And basically, the show, the beginnings of this show would be about, we're in the middle of winter, obviously, what a home's performance is like in the wintertime. How can you tell whether or not your house is performing to an acceptable level, whether you're going through a lot of heating fuel, whether you're consuming energy? It seems to be a big hot button topic today, which is our energy consumption. We have called it our carbon footprint, and it's kind of like a hot button today, and it involves a lot of money. So I thought that maybe one of the things I could do was to help, I could help educate people as to whether or not, or what the pieces are to helping a home perform decently during this season.
Yeah. And I mean, so for my house case in point, it's kind of, I've always kind of wondered, because my basement is mostly underground. It's I live on a slanted hill, and the back half of the house is under the ground. The front half has an open basement out into the front yard, so that's kind of exposed to the ground. And basically, I don't have any insulation on the ceiling down there, and I also have these what are essentially equivalent to plywood doors, like dual doors that open up into the basement. And they're not sealed or anything. They're not really offering a lot of insulation. And I was always wondering what would be like a cost-effective way of, you know, bolstering that to, because I can't imagine how much heat I'm losing, because one of the HVAC ducts actually blows hot air from the furnace into the basement to kind of keep the pipes warm and everything. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know if I should just get new doors down there, if I should insulate the open roof, or I don't know.
Part of the problem with doors is that obviously new doors are always a great option. They're not that expensive. I mean, you can go even to Home Depot, you can go to Lowe's, you can go to LaValle's. LaValle's has a door shop. You can order doors through Bellatates, Lumber Barn, anywhere. Basically, Therma-Tru is a company that makes about 95% of all the doors in this country. And obviously, new doors is the best option. The issue with doors is that there's always this relationship when you install new doors. There's always this relationship between how hard they operate and their sealing capability. So one of the complaints we get when we install new doors on the outside of a house is that, oh, it takes a lot of effort to push this door closed. Oh, yeah, of course, the old door was all leaky and had wind blowing through it, but it was easy to operate. And the new doors, you kind of have to put your hip into them to get them to close.
Yeah.
So there are gaskets on three sides of the door, on three sides of the door frame, but there's a gasket on the door itself that when you close the door, the gasket rubs against the sill, and that provides the fourth level of sealing. The problem is you don't really see it because it's underneath the door. That's kind of the most problematic thing, is that gasket, the one that's on the door that seals against the sill, is the one that receives the most amount of abuse and is the one to wear off the soonest. So to answer your question directly, new doors are obviously the best choice.
Yeah.
How you put the doors in is as important as the choice of door itself. For instance, A lot of people put doors in with, you know, they stick insulation around the doors, like fiberglass insulation around the doors. And the best way to put the door in is you foam it. So you use, we like to use minimally expanding foam so that it doesn't bow the jams.
Yeah.
And basically, the door opening should be wide enough. We call it the RO, the rough opening, is an opening that should be between a half inch and three quarters of an inch larger all around the door so that you can get the foaming tip of the gun in there. Mm-hmm. And when you foam it, you do it in such a way that you fasten the jam so that the foam doesn't bow the jam out and make the door that much more difficult to close. So in the foaming process of installing a door, you have to make sure that the jams are installed properly so that the foam doesn't bow the jams and make the door harder to operate and therefore affecting its ability to seal and operate.
Does the foam actually have like that much capability to actually physically force wood apart? Really?
So they have several different. They have non-expanding foam, minimally expanding foam, and they have fully expanding foam. So you have to be kind of careful because...
Yeah, I mean, I just, whenever I'd go to Home Depot, I'd always just buy foam. I didn't really pay attention to what kind of expanding factor it had.
Right, and they have different foam for different applications. For instance, they have foam that is in a can. It's a compressed foam in a can that is for installing subfloor. Like it's a foam that is subfloor adhesive. So many different products now are in a compressed state and have an applicator. But the foam thing is a real deal because the problem is that once the foam cures, it is nearly impossible to work with it.
Yeah.
If you don't have the jams shimmed exactly where you want them, or you don't have enough fasteners in them, and then you go to foam, it is so easy to get the foam to bow the jam in such a way that you can't open the door. Like, wow. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
The other thing that we like the foam for is that we've had instances over time where because the door opens and closes in such repetitive fashion that the fastening of the door in the opening can actually loosen up and your door can actually get loose. The door unit can be loose. I know there's trim on both sides holding it in place, but it doesn't take that many years of a door continually opening and closing before the door can be loose. Right. And what the foam does is the foam adds another layer of fastening.
Gotcha.
And it's pretty awesome. It really is a great way to make sure that a door works in the capacity to its fullest capacity that the manufacturer intended for.
What is the, I know, like, I've heard from some contractors in the past that have said foam isn't for every insulation. Like, what are the bad ones for foam?
I don't know. I kind of have an allergy when it comes to foam. It's, you know, there are plenty of contractors out there that, I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but there's plenty of contractors out there that use foam for everything. But
yeah,
we used foam for quite a few years, and we got into trouble with not putting enough foam in.
Interesting.
And, you know, foam has its place.
Right.
In my world, I've kind of gone back to a traditional way of building where I frame 2 foot on center, I use R21, or now we can get R23, we can get rock wool, or we can get regular spun fiberglass bats.
Yep.
And we use foam specifically for windows and doors, and that's about it. I've gone back to a house needs to breathe. I've gone back to the realization that a home is an organic structure. I've gone back to the fact that moisture needs to get out. I've gone back to a more traditional way of building, and over the years, I have found that even though the house might not be as tight, there's a lot less problems in a home from a moisture standpoint,
right,
just as a result of not making it so tight.
And, well, because you've said in the past that, I mean, the reason, you know, a lot of these structures in New England have been standing for 2+ centuries is because of the fact that they're allowed to breathe and that moisture isn't an issue because they do have that cross breeze coming through.
When I first started in business, I renovated a house in Charlestown, New Hampshire. The walls were insulated with tobacco. And then I went to another house and the walls were insulated with corn cobs and newspapers.
Wow.
And after a while, you kind of get the sense that these old farmers, they didn't really have a technical understanding of the insulating properties of different materials, but they understood that, you know, what they had available at the time probably was better than nothing than having wind blow through the houses.
Right.
But the trade-off is that you didn't have trapped moisture. You didn't have condensation issues. You had houses that stayed up for 200, 250, 300, no, maybe not 300 years, but you had houses that lasted a long time because they were dry.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something that I've always looked at from the standpoint of my perspective on things, is that I feel in a lot of ways we've gone so far the other way, like a house has to be tight, tight, tight. And I've just kind of reverted back to a conventional way of insulating in a way that helps understand with a comprehension level that it is still made out of wood today as it was 150, 200, 300 years ago, and the thing needs to breathe a little.
Yeah, for, you know, the common homeowner that's looking to, you know, improve on their insulation factor, if, you know, in their building, what's the best way to do that without causing some kind of moisture issue and sealing it so tight that you literally have no ventilation in the house whatsoever?
Okay, so this is a good point, because this is kind of like one of the purposes of this show is kind of like to raise people's levels of awareness as to what's happening with their house. I'll give you an example. You know, for instance, if you're outside your house and you look up at your roof, and we call them hot spots. One of the reasons why we don't really use recessed can lighting in sloped roofs anymore is because the recessed can would heat up and would melt the snow on the outside of the roof, and you would have these dimples. And you, at times, you could look out your house and go, oh, there's eight like cans in my cathedral ceiling, and oh, funny, that's where the snow is melting. And so, you know, one of the points of the show is to help people to just recognize when something isn't quite right. For instance, if you have a vent pipe that's outside your house, a vent pipe that goes through your roof that is supposed to provide ventilation for your bathrooms, laundry rooms, kitchens, drains, like all of your drains in your house will converge into a vent pipe. It's a stack that goes out through the roof. It's just PVC, 3-inch PVC pipe that goes through the roof, and that's what provides your ventilating for all your plumbing in your house to work. But sometimes, because the vent goes through your roof, it's one of those spots that is done in the plumbing phase, you know, sometimes after insulation, sometimes before insulation. But you'll notice heat loss around your vent pipe if there's no snow around it. It can be just as something as simple as that. You can notice heat loss around your chimney. I mean, basically, your chimney is a heat sink. You know, you have 450 degree heat. You have exhaust going up your chimney. If you have an oil-fired boiler or burner in your basement, and your masonry acts as a heat sink. And so it's very easy to see that if there's heat loss around your chimney, there's obviously going to be melted snow. If you have parts of your roof that are obviously spotted or dimpled with melting snow, you could possibly have an air leak. You could possibly have something inside your house that's going on that's causing heat to escape. The other thing that is a massive red flag is if you have icicles hanging off your eaves. I mean, the bottom line is that if a home is insulated properly, the roof should act as the ground, meaning that the roof should undergo the same weather cycle as the ground. The amount of weather that falls on the roof, the amount should be the same as the amount of weather that falls on the ground. And so your roof, if you think about it, your house is basically occupying space where the ground was. And so if you have a lot of icicles hanging off your roof, that means that the water that formed the icicles is a result of melting snow, and the melting snow is obviously coming from somewhere. So it's kind of like a big red flag. If you've got icicles 2, 3, 4 feet hanging off your roof, you obviously have some sort of heat loss that's contributing. It's the root cause of that.
Yeah, and that's actually starting to happen in my house. It's on the north side. I actually have some icicles happening. The rest of the house seems fine, but that north side, I'm starting to get some icicles. So, but I also know that there's like 2 to 3 feet of insulation in the attic. So I'm not sure what's happening there, but I probably have to have someone come to take a look at it.
Okay, so there are exceptions to the icicle thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, there are certain situations where the sun hits just right. Like there are, I don't want all the listeners here to think that, just because I got icicles on my roof, like I got a big problem.
Yeah.
I'm saying that if you have icicles on both sides of your roof, if you have 2, 3 foot icicles hanging down off your roof.
Okay.
The predominant cause is going to be heat
which makes
loss.
Sense, yeah.
That's the predominant cause. Right. I mean, obviously, it would take a site visit to determine exactly what's going on. But 90% of the time, it's going to be a result of some sort of escaping heat loss.
Yeah. Okay. So you're just wasting energy.
Yeah, you're just wasting energy. It's just, you know, and then the icicles form on the edge of the roof. And if you have an asphalt shingled roof, like when the icicles break off, they tear off pieces of shingles. And, you know, over time, it just leads to a deterioration of the roof that is accelerated. And so instead of, you know, having a 25 or 30 or 40 year roof, now you've got a 20 year roof because the leading edge of your shingles are all broken off. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a big one. And that's, you know, when I look around, I'm always looking at jobs I've done. I'm always looking at houses I've done, additions I've done. Like there's always some, one of the biggest things too, is that if you have a low slope roof, let's just say you have, you know, a dormered cape, you have a steep roof, and then you have gable vents or you have ridge vent, which is helping to remove warm air and dilute the air above your living space. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a low slope roof, well, let's just say you have some addition coming off a steeper roof, that low slope roof, it can always be a problematic spot because there's not enough cross flow of air above your living space in the attic, say, that can dilute the heated air enough. I mean, basically, if you think about it, any space above your living area, let's just say you have a colonial and you have your bedrooms upstairs, the space above your bedrooms, bathrooms, second floor ceiling, that space should be the same temperature as the outside air. So if it's not, and that air in that space is warmer than the outside air, you're going to have melting. And so that's why whenever we're doing a job, we're making sure that the size of the gable vents, the amount of cross flow of air coming in from the outside is at least, the volume is at least enough to keep that outside, the temperature of the air above your living space, it should be relative to the same temperature as the outside air. And that's how you prevent all the problems described before with icicles and hot spots, and you just kind of like avoid all that by being conscious of these types of things. Yeah. So if you have these conditions, you know, all you got to do is go out of your house right now and look up at your roof. I mean, basically, if your roof has an adequately covered layer of snow, let's just say, you know, it snows 6 inches tonight. Mm-hmm. Within some time, a week, providing that the temperatures remain cold, that blanket of snow on your roof should remain fairly consistent. And if it's leaving your roof in any premature way,
and of course, we're talking about asphalt shingle roofs here, not standing seam, which obviously the snow's going to slide off.
I'm just trying to like create an atmosphere in which people are more observant.
That's really interesting about
their own home.
Because I always was under the impression until now that it was supposed to melt off because your house was, you know, I just thought like, you know, like, okay, it snowed, you know, I got like 5 inches of snow on the roof. Like within like 3 or 4 days, like the heat from the house is going to, you know, get up through the attic, get up to the roof, melt it off, and then it's bare again.
An adequately insulated home should maintain the same weather cycle as the ground. If it's warm enough where the snow is melting on the ground, then it's going to be warm enough for the snow to be melting off your roof. Your roof is the ground. And if you think about it kind of in those lights, in that light, you kind of like just have a raised level of awareness that if you start seeing thin spots on your roof, something's more than likely going on because there's some condition that's causing the snow to melt prematurely.
Yeah. And that makes a lot of sense with my house, especially because I have a cape and the front side is very deep slanted roofing. And on the back side, it's very flat comparatively. And I think what's happening is what you said, where there's, you know, the ambient temperature in the top of the attic isn't the outside temperature. I think it's more akin to what's inside the house. So I think between the fact that it's that, you know, that little of a slant, plus the fact that it's on the north side, plus the fact that there's probably heat dissipating from the house means that it's probably melting, causing the icicles on that side. And I've got the problem that I have. So.
Right. And so, you know, one of the things, too, is that if you think about, like, a lot of people have radiant heat in their house. Like, what is radiant heat? Radiant heat is tubing that is installed in your joist bays to help. Radiant means your heat is radiating. So your floor joists heat up, your subfloor heats up, your floor heats up. Like, radiant heat is a great way to have a heating system in your home where you don't really see it. It's hidden. And so if you think about the concept of radiant heat, the materials in your house are absorbing heat. So one of the other issues, I'm glad you brought that up, Matt, is that your ceiling materials, your drywall, your ceiling framing materials, like all of these materials act as heat sinks. They're like a means by which energy is transferred from the heating space to the cooling space. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's what I'm saying is that when you insulate a home, you want to be conscious of the fact that You're trying to overcome some natural tendencies of the home to heat up this space, not only just heat up the space above your living space, but also it gets, it's moisture prone. So, you know, that's why the transfer of air above your heating space is so important. And most of the time, if there's problems with your roof, you either don't have enough air transfer or you don't have enough insulation. It's one of those two things.
So what is, so if someone does go outside and notices that there are icicles like hanging off the eaves of their house, I mean, what would be the, what's generally the fix for that kind of thing? Is it just kind of going in and...
So generally the fix for it is there are companies that do evaluations of your home. I know that Dayco, like there are insulating companies that can come out mm-hmm. and can do an evaluation of your home. Traditionally, it's not difficult. Like we're not a bunch of rocket scientists out there. At least I'm not mm-hmm. a rocket scientist. If you see something and that something is a cause for concern, there's no reason why you can't call me, call any proficient builder out there and say, I've got this going on. And a lot of times it just doesn't take that time. Somebody can snap a picture of their home, text it to your phone and say, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And so there's a lot of conditions that are situational that require an evaluation. Mm-hmm. I know sometimes we live in like, oh, we got a Dormer Cape, we got a Colonial, we got a New Englander, we got all these homes that fit like traditional cookie cutter patterns of what we build. Yep. But there's so many homes that have been added on to. There's so many second floors that have been put on. There's so many additions, master bedrooms on the first floor. Like there's so many alterations that have been done to houses. A lot of times, this process of making sure that we have proper transfer of air is overlooked. Mm-hmm. And so to answer your question directly, call a competent builder, somebody who's been in business for a while, who you can send pictures to and say, okay, this is what's going on. And in those situations, that person can direct you to a dedicated insulation contractor, a dedicated heat evaluator, a dedicated company that can try to solve that problem. So there are resources out there that can take care of this. You can see how this one topic of insulation is can be very problematic because a lot of times in our daily life, we are concerned with work, we're concerned with our kids, we're concerned with our church or wherever we're, where, whatever occupies our time. Mm. And our home is a tremendous absorber of energy. And, you know, the point of the show, you can see we spoke for a half an hour just on insulation. Mm-hmm. And so the number of issues that a home represents, we could make a half hour show out of 15, 20 different topics that a home represents.
Oh, yeah.
And so the point of this going forward is to try to, the point is to try to raise people's level of awareness that if they see something, don't just think it's normal or that's the way it's supposed to be. All of these things, if people's levels of awareness is raised, all of these things can basically what I call lead to less carrying costs, more efficiency. It leads to each one of us being more conscious of how much energy we're burning. You know, it's like food production today. You know, everybody thinks, well, we just got to make more food because our population is growing. Yeah. I think a recent statistic is like we throw out 30% of the food
yeah.
in our refrigerator. And I don't know if anybody has been to a restaurant lately, but if you saw how much food is thrown
insane.
Out. If we were just more conscious of our usage and be more of a steward.
Yeah.
It's kind of just, we don't need to produce more. We just need to be more conscious of what we're consuming.
Yeah.
And every one of us can do this. Mm-hmm. Even a kid can, you know, if a kid listens to this broadcast, he can say, hey, mom, I saw this up here. What's this doing? Or why is this big icicle here? And each one of us, I feel like going forward, is responsible for our own existence. Mm-hmm. And by promoting a show like this or talking to your friends and neighbors, it really can help each one of us understand this massive, massively huge component of our lives. Renters can do it. Homeowners can do it. Anybody who has a raised level of awareness can be conscious of these things.
This is a wrap of this edition of our program with George Neuer from George Neuer Construction and Trusted Rentals. Of course, you can head to either of those places online and get some more information on them as well. If you have any questions, we'd love to hear from you for future topics coming up. So you can either, for the moment, you can email Matt, M-A-T-T, at WNTK.com. You can also text me something if you'd like, 617-999-2430. And I'll also put a post up on Facebook. So if any listeners have questions for next week's edition that they would like answered, we can certainly do that as well. So just feel free to let us know what you're wondering about with your house or a car, whatever is going on in your world of automotive and home construction and whatnot. And we will try to address it for you. We will talk to you next week with another edition on News Talk 99.7 WNTK, AM 1490, FM 98.9 WUVR.